from the heart of our nation's capital, this is Washington Watch Weekend Edition. Now, here's your host, David Salkeld.
Greetings, fellow patriots. I am David Salkeld, and I'm a constitutional conservative, husband, and homeschool dad. The crisis at the border, with children being separated from their families, has been in the news a lot this week. And here at Washington Watch, we thought we'd give you a different take on the things you might have heard in the media. A little later, you'll hear from Representative Jim Jordan of Ohio, as well as forensic scientist Dr. Lori Baker. But first, on Tuesday, prior to the president's executive order being signed, Family Research Council President Tony Perkins talked with Attorney General Jeff Sessions about what is really going on at the border.
Attorney General Jeff Sessions, welcome to Washington Watch.
Tony, it's good to be with you, and thank you for your visit and our other good friends and their thoughts and prayers. It was it meant a lot to me to be with you and to talk seriously about how we can make America better, create a system that's more responsive, that's more sound and consistent, so people know what the rules are, and the rules don't encourage people to do reckless things like bring children across dangerous borders and those kind of things. I think that must be our goal. We are a generous nation, as you well know. On immigration, we admit over 1 million a year to permanent legal residents with a pathway to citizenship. So, but we do think there's so many holes in it. It's like Swiss cheese, really. People are taking advantage of the system. People who are waiting their turn get frustrated, and those who are breaking line are getting ahead and placing children at risk. So we need legislative reform. And we need to do a better job about carrying out the laws we have.
Now, General Sessions, this is not Gladiator Radio. I don't beat up my guest. This is what I consider to having a conversation to educate people across the country with those that are actually enforcing the laws, those that are creating the laws, those that are setting policy for our country. Now, I've known you for a number of years, and first, I want to take an opportunity just to set the record straight on your – you've been portrayed as if you're anti-family, that somehow you take great pleasure in dividing families. And I'll have to say that's not consistent with the record that you built when you were in the Senate and when you were in the House in the Family Research Council. I mean, you've got 100% rating with us when it comes to the family. So what's this issue really about?
This issue is about establishing a lawful system of immigration that's fair, that's just, that serves the interest of the people of the United States of America and protects them and their legitimate interest, and at the same time allows for a certain number of people, and there have to be limits, to come into our country lawfully each year. What we've got now is a system that's not working. We do need legislation. That's been known for some time. And we have a situation in which it really places people at risk. I think we can do much better. The President Trump is prepared to reach out with a policy that provides relief in significant degrees for the younger people that came, the so-called DACA students and kids, and then to provide an ending of the illegality through a wall and through better enforcement of our laws. If we put a package together like that, that should have the support of everyone, because I can't imagine many people that would openly say they want illegality to continue. I can't imagine that would be the policy, but it seems right now that anything you bring up as a matter of legal change that works and has an impact is complained of by certain activists in the country.
I know you've had conversations today with members on Capitol Hill about addressing this situation. Are you hopeful that we will address this and other issues, or is it going to end up just addressing this one aspect and be kind of a patchwork address to the immigration problem?
We can't say for sure, but it's clear to me that patching the problem is not the right thing. We can, through the use of our laws and through our construction of a wall and better enforcement mechanisms, we can alter this illegal situation dramatically. We can create a system we can be proud of that serves our national interest and is fair to people around the globe who'd like to come to America in a lawful and legal way and be able to be permanent residents here. This is needs to be done. It's been out there for a long time. And I think you're right. The opportunity is here. This is one of the things that's highlighted it, but there are others. And so the bill could pass on its own, and I think that could be could fix the problem. Properly drawn, it could really help us. Tony, and so, but I really do just want to support what I think you were indicating, that we need a legislation that's being drafted in the House. There are two bills. The president said he would support either one of the bills. Chairman Goodlatte, I talked to him today. It has a fix in there for separation of families on both of the bills. And so we need to get this thing done. But the overall bill that the House is considering would be preferable, in my opinion. If I could just give a minute what's been happening. It's unlawful to enter the country outside of our port of entry in an unlawful way, breaking across the border, just a plain criminal act. And we've not prosecuted enough of those cases, so our goal is to prosecute all those cases. What's happened and they're promptly deported, usually time served, often within a week of when they're captured, and they're sent back home. But what we've seen in recent years is that more and more families were coming. And the reason we've discovered that that happened is because we weren't prosecuting adults who brought children. And they were getting into the country. They were apprehended by our borders, often in remote, dangerous areas. And then they were released and asked to come back to court. And some came back to court, and some don't come back to court. They're basically in the country and almost too frequently never returned home. And this is a problem. It became known, and so in 2013, we had 14,000 like that. In 2017, last year, we had 75,000. It became well known that if you came with a child, an adult with a child, you weren't going to be deported or prosecuted. And this has created a massive loophole for us. And so we've got to try to close that loophole. If a person or a family wants to enter the United States and claim asylum and apply for entry that way, if they go to one of our many ports of entry and make that claim, they haven't violated the law. The families will remain intact, and they'll get to have an asylum claim. The only reason they're being separated now is to have a prosecution of the adults, and certainly not the children. The children have to be held in a different place than the detention center that the adult will be in pending their adjudication. So we want to do this thing right. We spent $1 billion last year on trying to make sure children are well cared for. And, Tony, one more thing that I think most people don't understand, maybe 80% of the young people that have entered the country unlawfully in the last year are unaccompanied minors. These are children that came without any adult. And this is a highly dangerous thing. Both of these situations are dangerous for children. We need to create a lawful system. If people want to come here lawfully, they should come and apply and enter through our ports of entry.
And as you and I talked about today, there's no way to absolutely guarantee that when an adult has a child, that that's actually their child.
Right. And matter of fact, we know for a fact that many adults taking children along are not related to them. Could be smugglers, could be human traffickers. It's a very unhealthy and dangerous thing. It needs to end. We need to return to a good lawful system. That's what I believe the president wants. I know that's what he wants. And that's what I want to see Secretary Nielsen and Secretary of Health and Human Services. Health and Human Services is the agency that actually takes care of these children and provides them food and health care and education and language skills. That's what we spend $1 billion on a year. It's through our criminal justice system, but our Health and Human Services system.
You can find out more about this topic when you head over to TonyPerkins.com and follow the links. Also, I want to invite you to be a part of keeping Washington Watch on the air. And as we approach the end of our fiscal year, friends of FRC are offering to double your donation with a match. Donate today by going to TonyPerkins.com and making a contribution. Again, that's TonyPerkins.com.
Since the 2016 election, faith, family, and freedom are on the move in America. Can values voters keep the momentum going in November? If you're like me, you care a lot about where our culture is headed. Now is the time to stand with our leaders and fight for our values. To join this noble mission, mark your calendar for the Values Voter Summit on September 21st to 23rd in Washington, D.C. Past speakers include Donald Trump, Mike Pence, Paul Ryan, Kirk Cameron, Dana Loesch, and Ben Carson. Visit valuesvotersummit.org for more information.
Welcome back to the weekend edition of Washington Watch. I'm your host, David Salkeld. As I mentioned earlier in our show, President Trump signed an executive order on Wednesday that will allow families that illegally cross the border to stay together. These families make a very dangerous journey, and Dr. Lori Baker heads up a group called Reuniting Families that identifies the remains of illegal immigrants who have died while trying to cross the desert. Here's Tony Perkins.
Dr. Baker, welcome to Washington Watch.
Well, thank you for allowing me to talk with everyone today. This is something I feel very passionate about, and I'm so glad to have the opportunity to share it with others so that we can all act for the best and the good of these kids.
Before we get into the discussion of the application of the DNA testing, explain a little bit about what you have been doing on the border for the last 16 years.
Well, we've had a problem on our border for a long while, but in the 1990s, the U.S. instituted a new policy to try to prevent people from crossing, especially at the major urban areas where most of crossing took place. And these initiatives were to put resources and people along the border to make it so likely that you would be apprehended if you crossed without documentation, that you wouldn't cross, or you'd have to go into these really desolate areas. And what we found is that people are leaving not just for economic reasons, but now for safety reasons, especially from Central America, and they're willing to take the chances to go into these desolate areas, and it's very difficult for people to survive under those conditions. And my problem is that it's even harder for children. They can't regulate heat. They don't do well. We see hundreds of deaths each year, and even more that we can't even find the individuals that are missing. And when you put children under these circumstances, it's extremely arduous. And we've spent time, there have been instances where we're working on the border recovering the remains of unidentified individuals who've died, and we've found children. And, you know, sometimes we're lucky and we find them alive wandering by themselves because these coyotes get upset because they're too slow. And they have to get their people where they're going, and they'll just leave these kids behind. I remember one day we found a 11-year-old and a 6-year-old that were all by themselves. And they were unaccompanied, leaving their homeland to come to the U.S. Luckily, these children were alive, but many that we find are just not. And I've spent quite a bit of time talking to families and trying to understand how you get to a circumstance where you'd let your 15-year-old child come by themselves from Guatemala all the way to the U.S. And so I talked to these moms and asked them how they made that choice, because I have three young kids, and I can't imagine being faced with having to make a choice like that. And these moms, every single one of them tells me he was told he had to join a gang. If he didn't join the gang, they would kill him and kill his family. He joins the gang. It's such a violent lifestyle, he won't live very long. His only hope is to come to the U.S. We know that there's a good chance that he would be hurt or brutalized or even murdered, but we had to take that chance because there's no hope here. So I appreciate that you said that we're talking about symptoms, because we are. The underlying problem is the instability in Latin America. People can't live in their homelands safely any longer because of the violence. We have some of the highest murder rates when you look at El Salvador and Honduras of nations that are not at war. I mean, the number of homicides happening there is so outrageously high, and there's no rule of law. People are going to keep coming until there can be some stability. And until we can help bring stability to these nations, we're going to continue to see people take their lives in their hands and come here. We're also going to see all of the other that comes along with it. Most of the people we're talking about coming to the U.S. are not violent criminals. They're good people trying to have a life, and especially all these children. We had over 40,000 children come last year that were unaccompanied to the U.S.
Right. It's a very complex problem, and we're focusing on one aspect, and that is the children with families at the borders. But there's a foreign policy component of bringing stability south of our border. There's our own enforcement of our immigration policy. When it's lax, it's an invitation for people to come. But you have been spending the last 16 years identifying the remains of those that did not make it across the border using DNA. How frequent are their deaths on the border? I mean, is this a big problem? Are we seeing a lot of people losing their lives crossing the border?
Absolutely. In the summertime, in some of the areas where I've worked, we have two or three cases a day where we're going out and recovering individuals. So they're constant, especially in times when it's very hot outside. We see a lot of people crossing in the summer, and it's just very dangerous. The temperatures get very high, and then they get very low. We have traffickers that aren't honest with people about what they're going to face, and people aren't prepared. They get left behind. And many of these deaths are happening in rural areas, especially in Texas, where we don't have medical examiner's offices. So there's no investigation, and there's no way for families to find out what happened to their loved ones. And what really disturbs me is that some of these cases are homicides, and they're not investigated, which means we don't have the rule of law on our side of the border. It is a very complicated issue.
Right.
Luckily, we've had some really great advances with the National DNA Database and the National Missing and Unidentified Person System, and trying to get a system that works for these international migrants for their identifications. So we've made a lot of progress, and we have a lot more that we need to make.
So, Dr. Baker, this technology of using DNA to identify the remains, there is the possibility of using DNA testing to verify the connection or the relationship between parent and child when they're apprehended at our border, correct?
Yes, and I think this is really important. What we've seen are these tens of thousands of kids crossing unaccompanied, and we've seen a rise in the number of... It's very difficult to seek asylum if you're an adult man. But if you're an adult man traveling with a child, you have a better chance of being granted asylum. And so what we've seen are these men traveling alone coercing these children to saying that that's their father. And, there's a lot of different ways in which this happens. And we need to verify what's going on. We're seeing a huge rise in human trafficking all along this area because you have all these vulnerable children. And if we allow people in the U.S. to claim these children, we need to prove that they really do belong to them. This is something that's done fairly standardly for people in immigration, like in the U.K. This happens all the time. In fact, they have many online services where you can go and make these verifications of your identity for immigration purposes. So it's not really outlandish, and it's not that it would be the first time it's been instituted. It just would be in the U.S. in these cases.
And how, what would be the time period in which this could be verified, the relationship could be verified?
most of the labs can turn it around in about 24 hours once they get the sample. So the biggest issue would be making sure that there are labs with capacity to do the work and getting the samples to the labs as quickly as possible. So certainly it's very feasible within a couple of days. And if we were able to increase the capacity of laboratories that already exist, it could cut that substantially.
And we're out of time, Dr. Baker, but one final question. How conclusive would the test be?
Oh, 100%. These tests are very accurate.
All right.
Now, there are issues if the father doesn't know that he's not really the biological father, but there are lots of other ethical questions we'd have to ask along the way as well.
But it does get to the verification to try and prevent children from being exploited, without question. Dr. Lori Baker, thank you so much for joining us. Very insightful. Appreciate you taking time to be with us.
Thank you.
Again, that was Dr. Lori Baker from Baylor University. To find out more, just head over to tonyperkins.com and follow the links. Also, a quick reminder that your generous contributions to Family Research Council enable us to continue making these programs available, and you can donate when you visit tonyperkins.com. We'll be right back with more Washington Watch right after this.
Hello, this is Tony Perkins with Washington Watch. We have our greatest opportunity to advance biblical values in our nation's capital and across America than ever before. But we urgently need your help to seize this moment. For 35 years, Family Research Council has stood for human dignity. We're standing up to the cultural bullies like Planned Parenthood and the SPLC that are pushing shocking sex ed programs into our schools that is nothing short of pornographic. And we know the harms that creates. Religious freedom is being restored, but much work remains. As our fiscal year is quickly coming to an end on June 30th, Friends of FRC have offered an amazing $800,000 matching challenge that will double the impact of your gift today. Help us complete our mission as we pursue a culture in which all human life is valued, families flourish, and religious liberty thrives. Visit TonyPerkins.com to donate today or call 800-225-4008. Again, that's 800-225-4008. May God bless you in your faithfulness.
Welcome back to the weekend edition of Washington Watch. I'm David Salkeld. On Thursday, the House defeated a GOP immigration bill that would have combined a narrow legalization for so-called Dreamers with a major boost in border and interior enforcement. Joining us to talk about that bill is Congressman Jim Jordan of Ohio.
Congressman Jim Jordan, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Tony, good to be with you, buddy.
All right. So, what do we read into the failure of this first immigration bill?
I mean, I think a couple of things. One, it was just they both short. So, in simple terms, if our leadership would have put the same intensity behind whipping this and getting the votes for this, I think we could have passed the bill that is consistent with what we told the American people we were going to do, what the president told the American people we were going to do. And that's what's unfortunate, because we were so close. You 193 votes. We only needed about 200 and I think 21 votes for 214 to pass today. So that's the disappointing thing. If we'd have put the same effort our leadership had, I think we could have got this done.
So why did they not support it? Given the situation we have now on our southern border, there's a crisis. We've got to deal with immigration.
Yeah, that's the big question. I don't know. We've been pushing them for months. The fact is, this bill said, let's build the border security wall like we all campaigned on. Let's end chain migration. Let's stop the visa lottery. Let's reform our asylum law, which is a key issue right now when you see what's happening on our border. Let's get rid of the sanctuary city policy that some of these cities have. Let's do all those things that are consistent with the mandate of the election, consistent with what we promised the American people we would do if they put us in power. And then let's also address the DACA population. That is common sense. That's a piece of legislation that the American people strongly agree on, and we were just a few votes short today, which is unfortunate.
Well, I know there's a little backstory here too, because conservatives were pushing for this vote even before this current crisis arose.
We stopped the farm bill, Tony, several weeks ago, because there was this discharge petition, which we all know would have led to a really bad outcome on immigration, a bad piece of legislation with a handful of Republicans and all the Democrats supporting that would have went to the Senate. We were trying to stop that. So we stopped the farm bill. The Freedom Caucus members did. we stopped that. We said we need to vote on the right kind of immigration bill, the right kind of legislation that is entirely consistent with the pledge, the promise, the words we told the American people we would do on this issue. And that was the bill we had today. And yet, like I said, we were 21 votes short.
And by the way, the Farm Bill passed after that vote by, I think it passed by one vote.
Yeah.
Is that correct?
And that was, we said, look, if we can bring up this bill and have a chance of passing the right immigration bill, then we're willing to allow the Farm Bill to pass. If the good welfare reform starts, it's in that bill on work requirements for food stamp recipients. So that did pass, but unfortunately, the immigration bill did.
Well, you kept your word, and you guys supported the bill when it came up. Maybe next time in your negotiations with the leadership, you need to throw in that they need to actually support the bill and whip it.
One member of leadership voted against.
I mean, this leaves us still, though, in a quandary when it comes to the immigration issue, because this is a crisis that is only being magnified and growing with each passing day. I mean, what's the future here?
Well, now look. Congressman Meadows has a bill, Senator Cruz has a bill, that would address the family separation issue, but at the same time, it would clean up our asylum law. I was with ICE and Customs and Borders in our office last week, and they told me that 80% of the folks seeking asylum in this country are actually not eligible when they go through the determination process. So they come here, they're coached to say, well, I have a credible fear of persecution in their own country, but when they go through the process, they can't prove that. And they're not actually eligible for asylum in our country. So think about that. 2,000 people a week coming to the border asking for asylum. That's 100,000 in a year. And 80% of them, 80,000 of them, are not legit. So we need to reform our asylum law. And, yes, let's keep families together, as the president said yesterday. Let's keep families together during that determination process.
Right. But enforce the law.
This is common sense. Adhere to the rule of law, but while you're doing it, keep families together. Who's against that? But Chuck Schumer is. Schumer has said he wouldn't support Senator Cruz's bill, would not support Congressman Meadows' bill. So this just goes to show the Democrats just want the political issue. They don't want to solve problems. They don't want to keep families together. They don't want to reform our law. They don't want to adhere to the rule of law, and that's a problem.
Yeah, and it's a problem that's not going to go away. Congressman Jim Jordan, thanks for joining us. As always, great to talk with you. Thanks for your leadership on Capitol Hill.
Thanks, Tony. Take care.
Well, unfortunately, that's all the time we have for today. I'm David Salkeld, thanking you for being with us, and I encourage you to be back here next week for the weekend edition of Washington Watch with Tony Perkins.
Washington Watch Weekend Edition is powered by the Family Research Council and is entirely listener-supported. For more information on anything you've heard today, or to find out how you can partner with us in our ongoing efforts to promote faith, family, and freedom, visit TonyPerkins.com. Also, to leave a comment about Washington Watch, call our watch line at 1-866-372-7234. That's 1-866-372-7234.